So surveillance has been going on for a long time, and we can assume that software-based surveillance has also been going on for a long time. But what's changing within this practice that's giving you concern?
What's changed in the last few years is that there is now a thriving market for security exploits. Right? So in any kind of government malware system, you have two components. Mm-hmm. You have the security exploit that is used to get the software on the system, and then you have the spyware or malware tool that's collecting the data. And by and large, the malware tool, it can be the same one that you used 2 years ago or 3 years ago. It doesn't need to change that much, right? But the zero day that you need to get your malware onto the system, those are changing all the time because there are always flaws that are discovered, and the vendors eventually find out about the flaws that the government's abusing, and they patch them. And there is a extremely large demand for these security flaws from government agencies, intelligence agencies, and militaries around the world. And not everyone has the resources to develop their own. And because these things are constantly being discovered and fixed by the vendors, then the attackers, the governments, constantly need a new source of these things. And so what's happened is that in the last few years, we went from having basically a system where security researchers would find flaws and publish them and get lots of press, to one where security researchers would find flaws and sell them to companies like ZDI or Tipping Point for, you know, $5,000, and then there'd be a responsible disclosure, to one where they're doing bug bounties, going directly to the vendors, to now one where they're signing NDAs with governments directly or signing NDAs with middlemen who are not interested in doing responsible disclosure, who are not interested in fixing the flaws, and who are themselves going out and abusing these flaws and hacking into systems. The reason that I'm concerned about this is that it is widely known among security experts. Journalists that I speak to acknowledge that they've heard rumors but have never written about it because they've never been able to speak to a researcher on the record. Right? No one wants to come forth and say, oh yeah, I sold something for $50K to this company, and I don't really know where it ended up, right? The chances are the zero days used for Stuxnet were paid for. They were not developed in-house. Mm-hmm. You know, it would be great resume fodder for the researcher who created those zero days to come forth and say, those are mine, but probably he wouldn't get much business from his previous client, again, if he did that. We need to start facing up to this. We need to acknowledge that this is happening. You know, the first step to fixing any problem is to admit that you have a problem. And that isn't happening right now. People are in denial. Everyone knows someone who's done it, but it's not being discussed. And so, you know, it's very rare that I get invited to speak to a room of people who actually poke holes in systems and who fix flaws and find flaws. And so, you know, my goal here was to shake people and make them pay attention and encourage them to start talking about it.
Okay. So would it be less troubling for you than if the CIA, FBI, NSA had employed their own vulnerability researchers and exploit writers, identified and developed these zero days internally and used them merely for their own purposes without the use of Vupin Security or any of these third-party companies that have come up?
So they already do have in-house people, mm-hmm. right? They just don't have enough. Mm-hmm. And, you know, maybe they have five or six flaws in Internet Explorer, and then Microsoft fixes them all at once without, you know, without any notice, and then they need something, and so they go out on the open market and they buy it. You know, I'm not naive enough to believe that governments can be stopped from doing this. You know, NSA is always going to be hacking into people's systems, and there's nothing we can do to stop that. But what I do think is troubling is the global trade in this, because if you think that our own intelligence agencies in the West can be trusted, maybe you don't think that foreign governments can be trusted in this. And U.S. companies, U.S. middleman firms are providing these flaws to foreign intelligence agencies. But even more troubling, from my perspective, is local and state law enforcement agencies. Right? The Keystone Cop is not really an expert in information security. We've seen Anonymous penetrate several local and state law enforcement agencies over the last year. If these guys can't protect their email servers, why do we think that they can protect the weaponized security flaws that they're using in their investigations?
Do we have a lot of evidence that local, state and local law enforcement are engaged in this in to a high degree? I mean, most of the stories we've heard have been federal or national.
Right. So the companies... So there's two kinds of companies in this space. There are the middleman firms that want as much press as they can get, and then there are the middleman firms that don't want any press. And so the ViewPen and Hacking Team, the Italian company, are two of sort of the biggest biggest companies in terms of their media coverage. They will do anything possible to be quoted in the press. And those firms speak and exhibit at ISS World, which is the largest surveillance conference in the world, and they will sell their products to anyone, any government. They have acknowledged that they are seeking to sell in the U.S. domestic market. They speak at ISS World in Washington, or at least in the Baltimore area, in October of each year. And, you know, we don't have any evidence that this is being used, but, you know, when the products are being pitched to these clients, we have to assume at some point that someone's going to buy them. If local state law enforcement agencies are using the other high-tech tricks that are being sold at ISS World, I have to assume that they're buying this stuff too.
One of the problems you raise, or one of the concerns, is with blowback, as you term it, which is, you know, unlike a weapon or a missile, which can be fired once or used once, and exploits can easily jump the cage and be used back against our own infrastructure or those of our allies, and that the people who use it initially have no ability really to control it and don't necessarily have the ability to control what the third parties do with it as well.
Right, yeah. When you sell a spyware solution or a malware solution to a local police force in Romania or Vietnam, there's no way of ensuring that it's only going to be used to spy on criminals in Vietnam. Right, there's no way of ensuring that it will only be used for domestic purposes. And so what you're relying on is the trust in your client. Mm-hmm. You're relying on them to have impeccable security and to have not a single police officer on the payroll of organized crime. And I don't think there's a single country in the world where the police are entirely free of corruption and have impeccable information security.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone has problems. And, you know, like music and movies and other digital goods, you can make an infinite number of copies of these hacking tools, right? Mm-hmm. A missile can only be shot once. These things can be used an infinite number of times. They can be transported across the world in seconds.
Mm-hmm.
Right? At least you have a hope that no one should be able to put a Stinger missile in their suitcase and bring it into the States.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe they can smuggle it in via a shipping container, but hopefully they shouldn't be able to do that.
Mm-hmm.
But malware crosses a border in a second.
Right. It sounds like one of the concerns you have is really that the governments and the contractors who work for them end up in something of a codependent relationship with cyber criminals, hackers, malware writers, that because everybody is now engaged in this snooping or surveillance, that the government now has mixed allegiances, for example, around an issue like a zero-day exploit in Windows or Internet Explorer or Adobe Reader, some very common platform.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's very, very reasonable to describe these mixed incentives, right? So we have a large debate going on in Washington right now about cybersecurity, right? There are multiple bills pending before Congress in the area of cybersecurity and cyber warfare. The big discussions about which agency will have the lead, how much money is there going to be, whether the president can have a kill switch over the internet. The one topic that isn't being discussed is how do we get consumers to install security updates?
Mm-hmm.
Right? There are 5% of U.S. consumers still have Internet Explorer 6.
Mm-hmm.
Where is the discussion about getting consumers to update their software? Where is the discussion about making sure that every government agency and every government contractor has an up-to-date version of their OS, up-to-date version of the web browser? You know, there's an even worse problem now in smartphones, where consumers are constantly out of date because the wireless carriers abandon them, don't give them security updates, and don't allow the OS vendors,
particularly with Android,
right, to deliver updates. And so consumers are all vulnerable, at least in the case of Android. I mean, literally, the moment you buy the phone, it's out of date, mm-hmm. and you're lucky if you get an update once a year.
Mm-hmm.
Where is the discussion about security updates? We mm-hmm. should be having hearings where the phone company executives are being dragged before both public and classified hearings and being berated for leaving large numbers of consumers vulnerable to cyber attack mm-hmm. and to cyber fraud. But we don't have that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think at least one of the reasons for this is that for law enforcement agencies to be able to use the tools that they're paying money for, consumers have to be vulnerable. You know, in my speech, I highlighted a statement from the former general counsel for the FBI before Congress last year, in which he described the need to make sure that average dumb criminals were not using sophisticated encryption tools, the need to make sure that technology not be secure out of the box. And I think it's tragic that our government doesn't have an incentive to keep us secure.
Right. Well, I mean, obviously, insecurity costs the society a tremendous amount of money as well. So, I mean, the government does have an incentive. The question is whether...
I mean, the government is a very large term, right?
That's right. But, I mean, which part of the government you're talking about,
but
right?
NSA, which is the agency that has the most information security professionals, and actually has two jobs, right? They're supposed to protect our nation's infrastructure as well. NSA itself is conflicted.
But do you really think that NSA or FBI or CIA need the open door of vulnerable operating systems? I mean, given the ease with which you can, you know, socially engineer your way onto somebody's computer if you want to be there, why would it be in their interest to take a position of saying, we don't want this person to upgrade to, you know, the latest version of IE or get off of Windows XP?
I mean, governments have a long track record in sabotaging information security standards, right? NSA blocked the export of strong encryption and blocked the deployment
for
of strong
while,
encryption
yeah.
for many, many years. Mm. Government agencies, including our own, sabotaged the original GSM standard to weaken the key length and to ensure that several of the digits were zeros, effectively truncating the key size. Again, the higher the baseline is, the more work it is for them. You know, of course, NSA can break an encrypted hard drive, but they would rather that not every person have an encrypted hard drive. They have the resources on a case-by-case basis to attack savvy defenses,
right.
But they don't want every single computer that they attack
right.
to be protected up to the gills.
Right. So to play devil's advocate and take the position of law enforcement, you know, they're going to say, look, a huge percentage of the organized crime and even unorganized crime and certainly state-sponsored stuff is happening online. It's not like Whitey Bulger where you can send a guy out in the car with a camera and snap pictures. Like, these people are all communicating online. And obviously the smarter ones are taking advantage of the security tools and Tor and what have you that are available to cover their tracks. If we want to ever bring any of these people to justice, we need access to their systems. And, you know, they can load up Kaspersky and run it too, so we need a way to get access and keep access that's going to be silent, that's going to be stealthy.
You know, I think we have to face the reality that criminals don't have ID cards,
mm-hmm.
right? That list their criminal status. There's no way when you buy a computer to force a consumer to say, I am a terrorist mm-hmm. or I am a law-abiding citizen. And so for law enforcement to be able to maintain their ability to silently penetrate our computers and silently wiretap us, we all need to be vulnerable, just in case one of us later turns out to be a criminal. And the problem with this is that we are not vulnerable solely to law enforcement. We are vulnerable to any criminal or any attacker using the same kinds of techniques. And I think that it would be a net benefit overall if society were using strong encryption, if we all had up-to-date security software, if we were all running up-to-date operating system software, if our mobile carriers delivered us patches in a prompt manner. Yes, it means that it might be tougher for law enforcement, but it also means that crime will go down because the bad guys won't be able to have these tools either.
For many people out there who are not digital natives or technically sophisticated, the barrier isn't I'm getting mixed messages from Uncle Sam. It's I just bought this thing at Best Buy. I just run whatever came on it and whatever my teenage child put on it. And I don't know anything about Windows Update or new versions of IE. I wouldn't know how to get them even if they were offered to me.
So there's no PSAs on television saying make sure to keep your computer insecure.
Right.
It's that we're not going down the path of getting consumers to update.
Right.
There are multi-billion dollar contracts being signed in Washington in the area of cybersecurity. There are large defense contractors that are all shilling their cybersecurity solution. And in the context of that debate, we are not having a discussion about getting consumers to update their software. Remember, every consumer whose software is updated is one less potential zombie.
So final question would be, if we give you supreme commander of government policy around IT security and privacy, what do you do?
Step one. Every government computer has to be running up-to-date software. Every government website will check the version of your web browser and all plugins. If you're not running the most up-to-date stuff, it refuses you entry. Step two, every government contractor that gets a dime of federal money, same rules. Every public university or private university that gets a dime of federal money, same rules. And then every government website that consumers, the regular taxpayers might visit, same checks. If you visit the White House website because you want to, you want to sign the White House petition, checks to see that you have an update web browser. Now, I don't think that the White House should be telling you you must update to Chrome, right? I think they could say we've noticed that you're running an out-of-date web browser. Mm-hmm. These are where you can download some of the popular browsers. Mm-hmm. We don't care which one you use, but please use an up-to-date one. Mm-hmm. I think we have to understand that this is a one-time problem because all of the browsers now auto-update. Mm-hmm. In one way or another,
mm-hmm.
right? The problem of IE6 users being abandoned, 10 versions behind, no updates in sight, those are gone.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe the solution is for the end consumer. Maybe the solution is to have something along the lines of the digital television switch, where they had $50 coupons that consumers could get that they could use to buy a digital television receiver. Maybe we need to give people $50 coupons that they can take to Best Buy and get the Geek Squad to install the security updates for their browser, right? The latest versions of Windows will automatically update themselves, install a recent browser, and then they're good from that point on. Eventually, consumers get new computers, and then they're sorted out, but we have millions of computers running out of their stuff. Consumers and businesses who still insist on running Internet Explorer 6 for their proprietary intranet crap. The surprising thing is so much of this stuff could be done via executive order. You wouldn't even need Congress to be involved.
Mm-hmm.
The president can just say, I want every federal agency to be doing this, and it's done. Years ago, the Defense Department said that they wouldn't buy any technology that wasn't IPv6 capable. Now, that didn't drive IPv6 adoption, but it certainly made vendors start building IPv6 support in their products, and support was one of the first sort of chicken and egg problems that had to be dealt with.
Right.
DoD is a large purchaser of technology. I'm sure there are lots of Windows XP systems running on Navy ships that haven't been updated in a while, and they could start there.
Chris, thank you so much.
Thank you.
I appreciate it.